So for those of you who are visiting, just to tell you what we do, the last Sunday of the month through 2016, we're going through the Beatitudes. We cancel Sunday school and we're trying to get the children used to sitting in church through a sermon. The reasoning behind that is that sometimes when children reach the age of 12 or 13, they think church is no longer for them. And we don't want our children to think that. So we're trying to teach them how to listen to preaching. And all that's different from the sermon point of view is there's more pictures. So if you're here as a visitor today and you come back next week, there'll be less pictures. That's what's different. Okay, so today we continue looking at the Beatitudes. We're calling the Beatitudes, or we said, they all lived happily ever after. And that's a good reminder at the start of what the Beatitudes are. When you think of the fairy tale where they all lived happily ever after, when you get to the end of the story, it says that from then on, they lived happily. And when we think of the Beatitudes, when we are understanding what the message that Jesus is giving is, he is telling us how God makes us happy. And when we start to see how God makes us happy, it's very easy when we, especially with today's, for they will see God, that we think of seeing God as only in the future. But we can be made happy by God today because we are able to see God today. We're able to see God in his word and we are able to know God as part of what it means here. So how does Jesus make people happy, the pure in heart? How does he make them happy when they see God? Well, if you think of things that you long to see, then you're normally made happy when you see them. A few months ago, some people around my age and older were made happy, or they were longing to see Bruce Springsteen. And they were going crazy about going to Glasgow to see Bruce Springsteen. Now, when they saw Bruce Springsteen, what did they mean when they saw him? There's Bruce Springsteen. I've seen him, I'll go home. No, when they went to the concert, they wanted to sing along, they wanted to dance. And the closer you could get to Bruce Springsteen, the better it would be. So they wanted to get close to him. They wanted to be near. And when we see God, we want to be near God as well. Another one that I think you might need to click this for me. This is about grandchildren. Some of you will have seen this. Watch this grandchild. There's Granny. Look at Granny. And look round here. There's Grandpa. Okay. Which is why I'm looking forward to grandchildren, because I'll get the hugs. What's that? She saw her grandpa. What did it mean for her to see her grandpa? She went into his arms. She was close to him. She cuddled him. She loved him. She ran to him. And when we say, happy are those who have a pure heart, when we think of what it means to see God because our hearts are pure, let's not just think that it's about looking at him and nothing changing because we see him. And not just being content because we've caught a glimpse of him and that's our relationship with him over. But seeing God, we understand, means more than just seeing him with our eyes. So what are we to do to see God? How can we see God? And if you went to the Bruce Springsteen concert, you had to pay £95, £104 to get in. You had to have a ticket. Now, this is all internet pictures. I wasn't there, I promise. And so you need your ticket to get in. You need to have something, some credential to get through to see Bruce Springsteen. What is the credential that you have so that you can see God, so that you will be able to fellowship with God? Well, Jesus says that this credential here, this thing that we need to have, is that we will have a pure heart. This person that we need to be is a pure-hearted person. This happy person is a pure-hearted person. So what is Jesus saying? Well, when we speak about a heart, if I say heart, what do you guys think a heart is? What's a heart? Come on. You're quite bright, Callum. It's an organ in your body, okay. And what does it do? It keeps you alive. So if your heart stops working, you're kind of dead. So this is the best picture I could find of a heart. I don't know how it works. If you've got any questions, you can ask one of the doctors here. But if our heart isn't working, we die. If somebody has a problem with their heart, it needs to be fixed. So when we say heart in our language, we are normally thinking heart. Jesus, I don't think, has this picture in his head, and he doesn't want to give us this picture. And I can't really give you the picture of what a heart is, as Jesus says it, apart from by pointing to all of you and saying that when you think, the Bible doesn't speak so much about our brain, does it? So the part of our body that the Bible speaks about, our feelings coming from, our thoughts coming from, where our decisions are made. It doesn't go through all the different processes that happen in this wonderful brain that God has given us. But it's spoken of as coming from our heart. So when Jesus says heart, it is the center of the human being. It is the seat of humanity, it's sometimes called. It's the seat of our reason. It's our heart that these things come from. Well, why does our heart need to be pure? Is there something that has happened that our hearts would need to be pure because they weren't before? Well, if you haven't been here before and if you have forgotten what we looked at the start of the Beatitudes, let's read the first two again. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. So who were the poor in spirit? They were people who recognized that their lives had been gone wrong because they had nothing to give. They had nothing to offer God. It wasn't that God hadn't made them beautiful or created them with intelligence or given them wealth or anything like that. But when they compared themselves to God, they recognized they were poor. And so who were those who mourned? It's those not who had lots of relatives die or who were sad at everything they saw happening in the world, but it was people who mourned because they recognized in their own lives they had become sinners and that they had offended God, and that caused them to sin. So what we see is that our hearts do have a problem, and all of the things that go wrong, all of the bad decisions we make come from our hearts, not from our heads or anything like that, or not just from them. I've got this picture here, which is of a boy pulling his sister's hair. And I don't know, I've got both my sisters here today, and I don't know if I ever pulled their hair. But if I did pull their hair, why did I do it? Did I pull their hair because I had hands that were good at pulling hair? Did I pull their hair because they were annoying? Did I pull their hair or call them nasty names because I had the ability to do it? What was it that made me do it? Well, what we start to see when we look at it is the reason we do all of these things that are wrong. It's not because of the external circumstance of the situation. It's not because you see something that you do wrong. It's because it comes from your heart. The heart of the human problem is the problem of the human heart. If you haven't heard that before, and by me saying that, you know I never made that up, but it's a good saying. The heart of the human problem is the problem of the human heart. So what is the problem with the heart? Well, Jeremiah said, first of all, that the heart is deceitful above all things and beyond cure. Who can understand it? It's the question at the end that makes a lot of sense to us, because our hearts, they trick us. Our hearts is where the wicked things that pop into our minds. We go, why am I thinking about this? I'm not supposed to think about this. Why was I reading the Bible one minute and am I having this evil thought the next minute? Who can understand it? Who can understand it? We can't train it. We can't fix it ourselves. And Jesus goes on and he proves that to me, that the things that come out of the mouth come from the heart, and these make a man unclean. That what Jeremiah said, Jesus proves, and we see it in our lives. And so it's all very good. It's all very good today. I was looking to see if you were singing, and it's nice to see you singing. But the problem that we might identify when we think about our hearts is that Jesus says about some people that they praise me with their lips or with their mouths, but their hearts are far from me. And what we have to see is we need this heart work to be done, not just something on the outside. So what needs to happen to our hearts? Well, Jesus says that we have to be pure in hearts. That's the sort of lives we need to live. Now, let's just remind ourselves before we look at this, we're not saying the Beatitudes are like a stepladder to get into heaven. The Beatitudes are a way we live, a way we walk because of what God has done in our lives already. But we recognize that what he has done is how the way he has changed us will be the way that we would want to continue to live as well. So what does it mean to have pure hearts? What is purity? Well, when we see this, can you tell me the difference you can see in these juices apart from the shape? One's 100%? One's 100% pure squeezed. Okay. I think we'll just go with 100% pure. And the other one is from concentrate. So there is a difference. And this is really quite a helpful way to tell you the difference about purity and what Jesus means when he speaks about purity. Because all that is in that one there, is squeezed orange juice. Nothing else. Well, somebody's shaking their head. There might be more than that. But let's say that it is pure. It should be pure. It should just be orange juice. Or let's push that out the side and pretend you've gone to a cafe in Spain and you've asked for orange juice and you've watched as they squeeze the orange in through the machine and it is just orange juice that you get and it tastes better than anything else that you would ever get. It is pure because it is just orange juice. It is singularly orange juice that's in it. And purity has this idea of singleness, of just being one thing. And when it's in the Bible, that's how it speaks. And what we look at in our lives, what should be in our lives, is just one thing. Just one way of living. Not this tug of war that we're involved in when we're being pulled from side to side, but we are made happy by God when we are living in this singular way, this way that just focuses on him, this way that lives where we don't get pulled the wrong way. We don't live sinful lives, but we live pure, God-honoring lives. Well, what needs to happen for us to do that is that we actually, to live pure lives, we need to be purified, we need to be cleaned. See, when we look at our lives, if we think of the other Beatitudes, we recognize that there is a stain from sin, there is a mess that we've made, we have done things wrong, and so we need to be cleansed. Now, if I was to get this container to be full of pure orange juice, what would I do? Could I add something to that to make it pure? What would I need to do? I would need to empty it all out, and I would need to take something pure and put it in its place. And that's how we need to be cleaned. We need all of us to be emptied out, all of our sinfulness to be emptied out. And we are made new people, not changed people, not just different people. We're new people, new creations in Christ Jesus. We are made new. We're given new life. And whilst we know, as we continue to try and live the Christian life, that the old life takes a long time to disappear, we know we need something completely new to happen to us. And that's what Jesus has done for us, isn't it? I mean, Jesus died on the cross when he gave his life for us. He gave his life to take away everything that was wrong, and he gives us new life. He gives us his righteousness. We are justified before God because Jesus takes our place. We have to be emptied, and Jesus takes the punishment for all we've done wrong, and we appear before God as pure. Made happy by God then, to be congratulated is another way of saying that, blessed at the start. Blessed are the pure in heart, because they will see God. Well, how does that happen? We have to ask for it to be happening in our lives. We read Psalm 51, create in me a clean heart and renew a right spirit within me. Why does David ask for that? Because he knows his heart is not clean because of things that he has done. He has to ask God for forgiveness. So this, how do we live this life of purity? We've got to ask God to create something for us. And we've to recognize we can't do it ourselves. And I'm going to show you this picture again. How do we solve the problem of Jeremy pulling his sister's hair? There are various ways we could do it. We could chop off all my sister's hair, and then I couldn't pull her hair. We could change that circumstance. And if I'm calling her nasty names, we could cut out my tongue so I can't speak. And I couldn't call her nasty names anymore. Or we could chop off my hands. If your eye causes you to sin, if your hand causes you to sin, chop it off, sort of thing. And the other extreme that people do to try and live clean lives is we could separate me from my sister and I could go and live in a monastery. I could be a monk and cut myself off for purity because that's the purpose of it. But can you start to see that these things don't actually change the situation? It's the heart that is the problem. So we recognize that we need to have a clean heart because change in the outside doesn't allow us to see God. Why does it not allow us to see God? Because we ask that question in Psalm 24. Who is he that is able to ascend the hill of God? Who can go to the place where God is? He who has clean hands and a pure heart, who hasn't lifted up his soul to emptiness, nor sworn deceitfully. So it's somebody who hasn't sinned with his hands, hasn't had evil in his heart, hasn't bowed down to idols, and who has always been honest with his friends, with his people around him. How can I get to the hill of God? How can I get to the place where God is? Well, can you think of anybody who has had clean hands, pure heart, and who has never bowed to an idol or sworn deceitfully? It's Jesus Christ. It's Jesus Christ who is the only one who is able to go to heaven. And so the gates of heaven are opened up, and he's welcomed in twice because he returns and he comes again. Is that prophetic? We think so. He is the one who allows us to enter. And we can only get in because of all that he has done. We can only get in to God's presence by asking that he would take our place, that he would cleanse us. And so then we know that we're able to enter. Remember when we looked at the first beatitude, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. We use that quote, nothing in my hands I bring, simply to thy cross I cling, recognizing the emptiness that we had. And we have to go back there to understand that that's how we can enter into heaven. We need Jesus to do something for us. And we remember this man, blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. That's our picture of the Pharisee and the publican. One's on his knees saying, Lord, be merciful to me, a sinner. And the other one saying, I thank you that I am not like other men. Who do we need to be like? The people who are begging. We have nothing to give. And so we have to go to God through Jesus Christ. And he makes us happy, not just by taking away our sin, but giving us the purity that we need. Blessed are the pure in heart. Well, where do we get the purity from? We get the purity from Jesus, but we will try and live in that purity. We'll try and enjoy that purity. If you want to know, if you think you're an unhappy Christian, if there's no joy in your Christian life, I bet you're like me. One thing gets in the way of joy: impurity, your own sinfulness, the things you do you shouldn't do, and not doing the things that you should do. It takes away all the joy. It takes away the happiness. Because we're not living the way that we should, the way God has changed us to be. Well, what does it mean to see God? In the Bible, it tells us in the Old Testament, no one has seen God. It tells us that in the New Testament, and no one saw God. Moses saw his back. Isaiah saw the train of his robe filling in the temple as God was there. But Jesus comes and Jesus says that whoever has seen me has seen the Father, because he and the Father are one. And so we can see God in Jesus Christ, and we can see God there. But what does it mean for us to see God? If God has cleansed us now, can we see God? Can you see Jesus right now? Can you see a physical display of Jesus Christ? And you have to say, no, I can't. So what does it mean to see God? Here's a very normal picture. If you don't know what that is, can you tell what it is? Even Fiona can't tell what it is. What is it, Robbie? It's like a pile of washing. It's folded washing on our bedroom floor. How did folded washing get onto our bedroom floor? Anybody got any ideas? Mum. He says mum. Why did he not say me? Why did he not say it was any of the other boys? And let's be perfectly reasonable about this. Fiona's mum has, I've seen her do our washing. And I'm sure my sister Sarah would come and do our washing if we needed to. And we could always take other pieces of evidence and say, well, it's not completely impossible that the neighbour across the road would have ran into the house, done the washing and folded it neatly. It's possible. But it makes absolute sense to everybody who knows us. It was Fiona that folded the washing. It wasn't me. And it wasn't them. It wasn't anyone else. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. How do we see God? When God starts working in our life, when God changes us, we see the evidence of God in all sorts of places we might not have seen it before. You know, I could dismiss that evidence and be completely convinced it was the neighbor across the road that did it. But actually, when Fiona stands in front of me at the ironing board sometimes, I've got to stop dismissing that evidence. When God works in our heart, he makes himself known. We start to see the evidence that he's working in our heart. When we start to worship God and want to worship God, I wasn't sure you were there, but now you're changing me. People find that happening, that God speaks. We're speaking to a man just now, and he had lots of questions about God and still has lots of questions about God, but one thing has really started changing him. He's doing this amazing thing called reading the Bible. And God speaks through his word, and God is showing himself to be God. And so we start to see God as the one who forgives our sins. We start to see God in Jesus taking our place for our sin on the cross. We start to look at the world and we don't say, We can't see the hand of God in everything, but we are able to trust because we are able to see God in it. How does that happen? Well, 2 Corinthians chapter 4, I think it is, tells us that the God of this age has blinded the minds of unbelievers so that they cannot see. And as we become believers, as we believe in Jesus, we see that there is sight given to us, that we are able to see what we didn't. Is the God of the ages, 2 Corinthians 4, we are able to see what wasn't seen before, and now we can see God. But what we start to see is not just that we know God in our lives, not just that we see him in his word and we see him in the Holy Spirit working in our lives, but we also have this longing, this looking to see God again. Well, what does it look like and how does it make us happy? I don't know what that wee girl who ran to her grandpa was doing before he came, but there's a wee girl looking out the window at something. And quite often we are people who feel like we're just looking out the window waiting for an exciting thing to happen. waiting for us to finally see God and to be with him. When you hear Christians say, I wish I was dead, which a few Christians have said to me over their lives, and sometimes you can understand why they would say that, to be rid of pain sometimes and things like that, but you don't need to be dead to enjoy God. We don't have to be looking out the window waiting for him, but we have to be living this life, living this pure life now, and enjoying, made happy, to be congratulated are the pure in heart, because they will see God. Well, when you die, you might want to see God and be made happy. If there is a God, you want him to be the one that would make you happy. But let's remember the Beatitudes have a right now impact. That actually we are to be poor in spirit now, we're to mourn, we're to be meek, we're to hunger and thirst after righteousness, we are to be merciful, we are to be pure in heart, we are to be peacemakers, and we will be those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake. That's the people who follow Jesus are like that. He's speaking to his disciples. And so if you just have a hope that you can live your life and at the end you will see God, but you're trying to actually have a mixed life, that if we did a wee sort of snapshot of your heart just now, we wouldn't see purity, but we would see all sorts of things. And God is actually one of the things that you want to keep out of your life. And I don't have much hope that you will see God if you are wanting to live like that. See, what Jesus says about us is that, or what the Bible tells us, is the Lord sees not as man sees. Man looks on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks in the heart. And however we have come to church today, whatever's been going on in our lives, whatever I'm trying to show off with a smart shirt and clean trousers, it doesn't wash with God, because he sees our hearts. And because he sees our hearts, we have to go to him and ask him to cleanse us from all of our sin, to take away what we have done against him. And then we want to live in this purity that we need. So the big question to ask everybody is, have you asked God to cleanse you from your sin? Because if you haven't asked God to cleanse you from your sin, to create in you a clean heart, to do something you can't do yourself, then you will not, you cannot, you will not see God. You will not be made happy. What do you want for everybody around you? Well, you want them all to be happy. Do you really want to live happily ever after? It's not a fairy tale. It is seeing God now and forevermore, because he changes us so that we can be the people who can ascend to the hill of God, to where he is. So I hope that if you have not asked for your heart to be purified, that you would ask now, and that you would know, you would see God at work in your life, not because there's clean washing on the floor, but because you see all that he is doing to change you. Let's pray.